Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Joe at RT.ie and 51551, wash your hands. Maria Connolly Gibney. Maria, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And first of all, condolences on the passing of your husband, Tom.
Thank you.
You say you are cocooning in grief.
I am indeed.
When did he pass away, Maria?
He passed away on the 15th of March, Joe.
Okay.
But he didn't have a priest until the 18th of March.
Okay, well, explain that. Now, he didn't. He was 92, and he wasn't hit by the virus.
No, okay. He wasn't. Okay. He was in a nursing home just for 5 months before he died.
Okay, so he died 2 days before St. Patrick's Day, which was another big announcement. What was the issue that arose, Maria?
The nursing home tried from 5 o'clock in the morning, Joe, till 7:45 when he died, ringing all the parishes around it, including our own in Selbridge, and we couldn't get a priest. They couldn't get a priest from anywhere. They were getting answering machines everywhere, and nobody rang back.
And when was he buried? Did you have a priest at the funeral?
We had a priest at the funeral eventually, who met him at the door of the church and blessed the coffin. And I said, well, that is good. I said, about time too. And he just turned around and walked up the centre of the aisle. But that was the first time he had been blessed in 5 days.
And obviously that means a lot to you, Maria.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, my own uncle was a priest in Trinidad, and, you know, he even buried a lad who had committed suicide. He insisted that he be buried in the graveyard because his parents had gone through enough loss.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Maria, are you being hard on the church? Like, it's a very difficult time. It's a difficult time for you. I understand that completely.
Yes.
But is it not a difficult time for the church?
It is. But on the Monday, he died on a Sunday. On the Monday, the funeral directors had set up a meeting with the priest in the parish. And my family came with me and we talked over. And he said that he has a direct line to the public. And if we had phoned that, he would have answered straight away. Now, the next day, Joe, we were to have prayers in the funeral home from 3 to 5, prayers from 4 to 5. And my son rang him on his direct line to know, would he be holding the prayer meeting? And he didn't get an answer.
Okay, it's very difficult. Maria, tell us about your husband, Tom.
Tom had a dental service, Camden Dental in Camden Street. I think everybody in the world knew him. He was there so long. And he was just a perfect gentleman to everybody and loved by everybody.
Fantastic. And when did you meet Tom?
Oh, 34 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Stay with us, because there are issues for the church. And if anyone is over 70, which you've revealed you are by telling me you're cocooning in grief, Maria.
Yes.
And you miss Tom
dearly.
Yeah, a lot of priests are over 70. That's the other issue for the church. Father Joe MacDonald. Father Joe, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Good afternoon, Maria.
Good afternoon, Father.
It's a tough time for priests, is it, Joe?
Well, it is a tough time, Joe, but it's just changing all the time, you know. I was involved with Tom's funeral with Maria.
I didn't know.
I didn't realise she was coming on today. But there's no problem. No, I'm very sorry. As I said to her at the time, I was very sorry about her experience. I'm not sure. I'm really not sure what happened, but the nursing home certainly they didn't ring me. I have a mobile here.
No, my son rang you, Father.
No, not sorry. I'm just talking about the attempt to get a priest when Tom died. I received no call.
Okay. Joe, sorry, I did not know because you contacted us about something else, and then when the priest was mentioned, I said, "Well, Father Joe's a padre and a good one; he might come on." I didn't know you were connected with this at all, and I don't want Joe. I'm not going to put you or Maria into any. It's a very difficult time. So, we'll talk to Maria about Tom and the great life he led and the great man he was. So, Joe, just generally, it is tough on the clerics, isn't it? Because a lot of the clergy are over 70.
A lot of them are over 70, absolutely. It's a tough time, and you're really trying to really negotiate what is best. And as you know, Joe, different dioceses have taken different steps. You know, if you're down in Connor at the moment, there's a sort of a complete shutdown, and there's no funeral in the church at all. And the remains of the loved one are going to the cemetery, the crematorium. Clogher just followed that on. But in Dublin at the moment, we're still trying to negotiate that, you know, have a funeral mass with a very small group of people. But it's very difficult, and it's changing all the time. I mean, at this moment, I know they're introducing more changes that will affect funerals. And you can't imagine, Joe, like, I mean, it's bad enough to lose a loved one, but for not to be able to have the basics that we've become accustomed to, I think just makes it really, really difficult. The priest, without being overly defensive about it, like, I think most guys are trying to do their best. As you say, you know, we're divided.
I stop you there for a minute, please? You told me you had a private line and it would be answered every time. My son left a message on your private line for Tuesday for the prayer.
Okay, Maria, I'm very uncomfortable with this. I really am now. I really am. Sorry, I didn't know that Father Joe was the priest. I know it's a very difficult time, but I'm very uncomfortable in this national emergency.
I
know, and you are as well. And I really appreciate that. He was obviously a fantastic man, but it is a difficult time for everybody. I don't know about timings and who said what to who, but I just want to offer my deepest condolences. Where was Tom from originally, Maria?
He was from Dublin, Marlborough Road.
And where did the two of you meet?
We met at a house gathering.
Oh, lovely. Okay. Yeah. And Maria, you're not only grieving for your dear husband, but you're also, are you alone in the house, Maria?
I am alone in a 4-bedroom house, rattling around by myself.
Okay.
Joe.
And how are you managing?
Not very well. Okay. To be honest.
And are you talking to people all day? And
Yes. I have wonderful next-door neighbours, Geraldine and Kevin Burke.
Okay, well done.
They're both postal workers, Joe.
Brilliant, they're brilliant at post.
Geraldine is a part-time worker, her husband is a manager. But, like, before anything happened about coronavirus or anything else, they would turn themselves inside out for anybody.
It's not fantastic.
That, like, they're straight from heaven. They have angel wings themselves.
Well said. Maria, how do you want your Tom remembered?
Really, for the lovely person he was. He gave to everybody without at times being asked. When he saw difficult situations, he stepped in.
Okay, well done.
And he helped them all. But the most important thing, Joe, is when the cortege was going to the to Newlands Cross, the public, glancing at the coffin, bowing their heads and making the sign of the cross.
Isn't that very respectful?
I could not believe that. Okay. Even a young girl pushing a pram, held the pram with one hand, looked at the coffin and made the sign of the cross.
That's fantastic. And tell that people obviously understand it's very difficult at the minute.
This wasn't only one or two. It was all the way to Newlands Cross.
Isn't that fantastic?
They were just absolutely... The comfort it gave me, Joe, somebody cared.
That's great. And Maria, did Tom was obviously, you told me earlier, he was very, did he have a special devotion to any saint or Our Lady, or was he just generally religious?
Just generally, and particularly actually to his own uncle, who was a passionist
priest. Okay. Maria, deepest sympathy, and may Tom rest in peace. That's Maria Connolly Gibney. I want to bring in Teresa as well. Thanks, Maria. I want to bring in Teresa as well, and I have to begin again with offering condolences. When did your mother pass away, Teresa?
It was yesterday. It was quite sudden. Not sudden, but we saw it coming a couple of days, but yesterday was final.
And was it COVID-19?
No, it's not been confirmed. We did try. Apparently, they did do a test, but the results isn't back yet. And I've been onto the hotline about it, and they were kind of saying, well, it's not really important because the funeral director will just deal with it as if it was. So the moment, it's considered suspected.
Yeah.
Until it'll probably be about 4 or 5 days before we find out for real. Like, of course, she'll be long gone like them.
And what, do you want to give me her first name, Teresa, or do you want to keep privacy? It's up to yourself. Privacy, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, you decide. That's fine. That's fine. What when you're now into a situation where you have to organise a funeral? So what's happening there? Because we live in very unreal times.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday, I think it was within a half an hour of actually dying. Like, we were approached by someone that said, well, have you arranged the undertaker? And I was like, you don't really think about the details like that quickly. Like, although like they were saying for a couple of days that there was a possibility, you don't really want to think that there's a possibility. And I certainly didn't go in with a bunch of numbers that I could ring immediately. I just wanted a few hours just to kind of grieve. But I mean, originally I think it was the coroner was supposed to come and get her, and then that would give us a couple of days to maybe arrange something. And then that plan changed to, well, the doctor will just sign it tomorrow, so when can you get the undertaker to come and get her? Like, and I was like, and then you don't have time to grieve. I literally have put grieving on the sideline, other than every so often when someone's nice to me, I'll just fold, like, completely, like. But otherwise, it's just like, I'm too busy phoning places that either that no answer, or it's just we're waiting, and then you give up, and then you try the other one, and then you're waiting. There's no answers in anything that relevant, anything that I can actually use.
And Teresa, will it make a difference? In other words, do the undertakers have to wait until it's confirmed whether your mother had?
I think there's forms you have to fill out, and I think the doctor needs to sign something special, like the cremation and stuff like that. I think they treat everyone like, I mean, obviously there's precautions in place. You have to kind of seal up the person and make sure that, you know, there's extra, you know, safeguards in case. And I think we're presumed to have it as well because we were seeing her those last few days, you know.
And, by the way, will the funeral be different? Will you have to get more resources?
I mean, originally I was talking to someone and they quoted a kind of, maybe eventually manageable kind of, but then when it came back, because there was extra, because they had to have a kind of a special team.
So if your mother did die of COVID-19, the funeral becomes more expensive.
Yeah, I mean, there's some things that don't need to be done, but then there's other precautions they need to take in order to make sure everything and everyone is safe and stuff like that.
So what they need, did you say they need an extra crew?
Yeah, I don't know. So I don't know what they would call them technically and stuff like that, but I think they probably have to do certain procedures to make everything safe and stuff like that. But I'm not really sure about the ins and outs of that, like, you know. But I know, like, when they went to check, that there was extra costs because they had to treat her like she was, because she was a suspected case, because she was with a bunch of people that some people were, you know, showing signs and stuff like that. So she had to assume, like, they could be.
So had the arrangements made at this stage, Teresa?
No, we're still, like, talking to people at the moment and stuff like that. We're just trying to, because I haven't been able to contact, we're in the kind of situation, we're kind of low income, you know, the family and stuff like that, and Mam was as well, like, so it's a case of, I was trying to see if I can contact the social welfare in regards to, like, exceptional payment type thing, like, maybe help with the funeral. But no answer. I mean, any phone numbers I either have, there is either no answer, No answer, no answer. I tried citizens' information. I mean, fair play to them. I did send a letter to them, and they said they'd get back to me in 2 days.
Oh, okay.
But they did. They did. Someone, you know, directly talk to me and stuff like. Well, still trying to directly talk to me, but at least they got back to me and stuff. But then, you know, in regards to kind of all the people that I would normally talk to and be able to arrange things, they just. I have no access to them, but yeah, I have the nursing home saying, "Well, when's she going? Who's collecting what? You know." And another family member died a few years ago. Well, when the funeral director came into the house, he said he wanted the money up front. Like, so I mean, yeah. I was almost afraid to talk to undertakers unless I had something.
Well, Teresa, hopefully that can be sorted out, and condolences on the passing of your mother. What age was she?
Well, she was a good old age, but still, we could have done another 20 or so of them for her. Yeah. She was about 80.
Yeah, well, that's a good age, but there's lots of people living to well into their 90s and beyond now.
Yeah.
Okay, Teresa, condolences, and may she rest in peace. Joe, as I say, I wasn't expecting that earlier call to go down that route. What words can priests offer at this stage?
Because a lot of
people are very angry with the world and the overwhelming nature of this virus.
Sure.
Sorry, you just wanted to say something.
Well, I just wanted to say that I'm really annoyed about how that happened there, and I accept totally it wasn't willful on your part. Yeah, I appreciate that. No, I appreciate that completely, but I just say to you, you know, I mean, Tom, Lord of Mercy, him got a funeral mass that gave him the honour and dignity he deserves.
Okay.
And at no point did a nursing home try and get me and me not
fine,
take the call.
Fine, that's fine. Yeah, that's fine.
You know,
fine.
So I just want to say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, okay, no worries.
But what you're saying, Joe, listen, people are on edge, people are angry, people are anxious, people are lonely. So everybody's nerves are a bit frayed, and you know, I get all that. I think when your researcher called me, it was about something I wrote there a while back, and I was really trying to highlight in that that, you know, for me, obviously there's the battle that's going on at the moment with the virus itself, and then obviously people are very conscious of the economic fallout, and then I think there's the whole mental health thing, there's the whole, you know, psychotherapy. There was an item this morning on Sean O'Rourke about people with addiction and so on. So there's all sorts of ramifications and ripples from this. And I suppose what I'm trying to ask, you know, and I say this unashamedly, I'm not coming from a big institutional religion in your face stuff, but I think from the point of view of our spiritual health, that, you know what, it's forcing us to ask questions around what's important to us, you know, to whom do we belong. And I think there's some good things coming out of it, not suggesting for a moment that the virus is good or what's happening is good, but that if people try to find some, you know, one of the things that come up there, even listening to Maria, was the loneliness, the isolation, the anxiety and so on, and to try and talk about ways that we have that make it manageable. You know, it doesn't make it attractive, but I think there is a refocusing on the level of our spirit, you know, the God issue in a broader sense, but also in terms of, you know, to whom do I love, who loves me, who's there for me. All those questions are coming up now, and I do think that in that, and that was the title of what I wrote, that there's no return, that, like, there's no going back to a normality that is for,
that's so
that
true,
is forever.
Yeah.
Forever changed.
So true. You know, I just want to bring Mags in, is in Wexford, contacted us on 1857 15 815. Mags, your mother died on the 14th of March, and you come in praise of the priest.
Oh, definitely, Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our priest down here with my mother was absolutely marvellous. He came and he anointed her, I don't know how many times, and he had to wear his gloves when he came, and he apologised for that, and but still, he came to her, and she so appreciated that.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, that's,
and he was so good. When she passed, he came straight away.
Okay.
Yeah.
And but what age was your mum?
Mum was 92.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Mags, that's well said, and it's a nice way to round up that piece. I really appreciate that, and God rest your mother. Let me bring in. Thanks, Joe, and thanks, Mags, and thanks, Maria. Maeve Kelly. Maeve, good afternoon.
Hi. How are you, Joe?
Good. And how are you, more importantly?
Well, I've been better.
Mm-hmm. because chiropractors, I did not know this, are not regarded as an essential service, and this affects you badly.
Absolutely, Joe.
Tell us how.
Well, 4 years ago, I was in a very bad road collision, which resulted in me having a horrendous break on my right leg, which now has a metal plate from the hip to the ankle. Mm-hmm. I fractured the left leg at the knee joint. I fractured the T7 in my back. I broke the C7 in my neck, and I had a traumatic brain injury. And the only relief I have had in 4 years is through chiropractic care.
Okay.
And I depend on it weekly. And it's closed.
And how often do you need to go for
sometimes
that list
three times a week, two or three times a week. But it keeps me in check. It keeps my pain in check. You know, and at the minute they're closed.
And it does give you relief.
That's right. It does. Absolutely. From the crash, the main nerve, the central nerve in my body was damaged. So I would have sensory issues. And I depend solely on chiropractic treatment for functioning every single day. At the minute, the triple nerve in my face is trapped. So the sensation to my jaw and into my cheek and the pain is horrendous. And even my swallow. One trip to my chiropractor and that's gone. 2 weeks in pain is too long. And even at that, we don't even know after 2 weeks if they will reopen. But I do know one thing, Joe.
Yeah.
And I don't care what guard is listening to me. If I have to travel to the north, they're open in the north.
Are they?
Yes, they are. And if I have to go to the north, I'm going.
Yeah.
And I think it should be open. There are people out there who really need chiropractic care at the minute.
I think a lot of people were, and I really appreciate your contact, Maeve. I really do. A lot of people are unaware of this. And we contacted the president of the Chiropractor Association of Ireland, Dr. Tony Accardi. Tony, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Pleasure to speak to you, Maeve.
Likewise,
hi,
in these
thank
awful
you.
Circumstances. So, Tony, when were you informed that chiropractors were not regarded as an essential service?
Well, Joe, to be honest, we've fallen through the cracks with this situation here. We do consider ourselves essential in the sense that we have all been trained to be primary care providers. However, if you look at the websites and so on, HSE, CORU is the organization that regulates the profession, social care professions in the country. And now we are not a regulated profession in the country. We have fought for regulation since 2000 and probably previous to that. And most recently, we've made some strides. The Department of Health is looking into a risk assessment. They're doing some, taking some measures and possibly regulating us, but we don't know. Anyway, CORU would be the responsible organization for regulation of professions. And we've followed their website and with the recommendations that they make for their members and the registrants, I should say, and try to incorporate them as much as possible for our own use. However, we know we're not regulated, so it does make us into a vulnerable situation.
Well, are you regarded as an alternative form of medicine?
I suppose some organizations might consider us alternative. We don't ourselves because we do feel that we're trained to be primary care providers.
I don't ask you to give the arguments against your profession, but just as we, if you could telegraph them to me, in a sense, what do people say? Like you're not trained enough, that it's pseudoscientific, that it's not.
Oh, patients actually understand that we are fully trained and you know, see our degrees in the offices and so on. You know, there's great respect for the profession by amongst the general public, and also health insurance companies cover chiropractic care.
Oh, do they?
They
recognize
it. Oh, yes, they do.
Yeah.
All third party. Will
VHI pay for chiropractic or they
healthcare?
They will. Okay. Well, that's interesting, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It's fantastic that they recognize us. You know, so we look forward to regulation of the profession. Mm-hmm. The Chiropractic Association of Ireland represents 75-80% of the profession in the country, and the government's quite happy with the governance that we implore against our, to our members.
And is there an overall governing, an international governing body that sets standards or practices?
Well, the European Chiropractic Union is European-wide, and they make recommendations as to which individuals, graduates of which colleges we should accept as members. And and also there's the World Federation of Chiropractic, and who's in official relations with the WHO, and we follow their recommendations as well. Now, each country has dictated their own concerns and regulations as far as controlling the coronavirus, and we are trying to adhere to the recommendations that they've set out.
But one of the recommendations...
everything from washing your hands to 2 meters,
keeping
the physical distancing and so on.
But have they specifically, have in the directives over the last few days, have they specifically mentioned chiropractic as a non-essential service, or they simply omitted you as an essential service? Do you follow me?
They haven't dictated one way or the other.
Okay, so they haven't said you're an essential service. So ipso facto, you're not an essential service in the view of the regulations at the moment.
Yeah, now you can look at the list of essential service providers, and you can kind of infer possibly health. Yes, we are involved with health. We'd like to see ourselves as essential service providers, but we don't like to read between the lines either. You know, so
okay, you don't want to risk it.
No, now we follow recommendations as similar to other organizations. The physiotherapists have said they recommend doors be closed and maybe use your discretion as far as seeing emergency patients. You know, so my heart goes out to Maeve and dealing with the pain and stress. And there's so many other people out there doing the same, dealing with the pain and difficulties of everyday life when you're suffering with effects of anything from low back pain to auto accidents. And
how many chiropractors are there in Ireland approximately, Tony?
About 165, I'd say.
Okay.
And we represent about 125.
Okay, and Maeve, Kelly, to come back to your awful circumstance, Maeve, you're adamant you do get relief.
Absolutely.
Okay, and
it has been my lifeline for 2 years. I was able to come off pain medication.
Okay.
You know what, my mobility was 100%. I'm back now. My daughter was in the crash with me.
Oh, my
She's
God.
Lying down because she has no balance. She needs to be adjusted. Her neck needs to be adjusted to give proper blood flow and oxygen. You know, I went through a stage where the vagus nerve, which can control your digestion. So if I don't eat every couple of hours, I get weak and collapse. That's because my vagus nerve was damaged. After going to my chiropractor, that has all stopped. Here I am a week later. We're not even a week gone into this, and I'm back to square one. You know, and also I'm still building muscle. Until my muscle is strong enough that I can stay aligned for longer, I depend on my chiropractor to keep me aligned while I'm building my muscle. At the minute, I'm restricted in every way. I'm afraid to go for a walk in case I do more damage.
Yeah.
So I'm just sitting indoors, and all my hard work in a couple of years is going out the door gradually. And it's very disheartening to know that they're open in the north of the country. But if I have to travel to the north, I'm going.
Yeah.
And if I have to stay there, I will, until this is over. Because I do respect the guidelines. I respect everything they're saying about COVID-19. But I also have to look after my own welfare, my own body. And there's no point in COVID-19 being gone in a few months' time when I'm back to where I was 4 years ago. After all my hard work, I'm not doing it. I need my adjustments, you know, for stability.
And is there anyone within a hospital setting that can do what chiropractors do, Maeve, do you know?
No. And I've had to go to out-of-hours GPs in the last couple of years. And the GP on call would say, you need to go back to your chiropractor on Monday. And let me tell you, I have seen paramedics, ambulance crews and doctors use chiropractic service in this country I don't understand why it's not a priority and on a priority list.
Yeah.
Maeve, we need you, if I may butt in, on our patient association. If you look on the Facebook page, you can see we have a patient association. You sound like you'd be a tremendous advocate of chiropractic and possibly help us become regulated in the future. So we invite everyone to join it. I mean, of course, you're dealing with so much yourself.
Well, Maeve, your list is just mind-boggling.
But Joe, my chiropractor that I attend to, my doctor, he doesn't just, you know, realign my spine. He gives me movements.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he gives me exercises. He has also emailed me and told me what to do for the next week or two.
Yeah.
And doing that is great. But if I'm misaligned, which I am at the minute, I can't fix that. And all the movement in the world is not going to fix it either.
And Maeve, given the list of your injuries.
Yes.
I know someone drove into you head on, isn't that correct?
From
the newspaper reports. And unfortunately, that man had mental health issues and wanted to die. It emerged. With that level of injury, were you close to death for weeks afterwards, given what you've come through?
I was. I was unconscious. I didn't know any of my family or anything, but, you know, breaks heal.
Yeah.
And credit due to the ambulance service and the frontline workers and the doctors, absolutely fantastic. And breaks do heal in time.
Okay.
But people forget that there's muscle damage, tissue damage, you have ligaments and you have nerves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, behind all the outer stuff or the outer layer that people can see, there's internal damage, you know. And through my chiropractor that I attend, you know, on a regular basis, he has put me back on my feet again.
Okay.
He has given me back my life.
Well, that testimony is so powerful. It really is. It really is.
I have a friend, Joe, who has a little boy. He's 6. He has severe autism. He's nonverbal.
Mm-hmm.
He attends a chiropractor weekly for bowel function. And also for TMJ. That little boy at present is pointing at his face and pointing at his tummy. He can't speak. He's telling his mother. He knows what he needs. That mum has nowhere to go with that little boy at the minute.
Okay, well, let's hope that your plea is heard. Maeve, when did you discover that the man who crashed into you did it deliberately? Not to himself, not to you, but...
I won't even say deliberately, Joe, because that would be wrong. The man suffered with severe unresolved mental health issues.
Oh, my God.
I don't believe he knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
He was so severe with his mental health issues, you know.
Okay.
I don't believe he knew exactly what he was doing that night.
Okay, and God.
Lord have mercy on him.
God He's rest gone. Him, yeah.
But you know what? If your body is not right, your head is not right. And there's a lot of people at present with mental health issues, trust me. And when you're sitting at home and your body is in pain, you're living in your head and you're looking for help of any kind. You can't waste the ambulance service time. They need to be out there for bigger causes at the moment. The same with A&E. But if I had a chiropractor today, you know, to be able to go to the doctor's office, 5 minutes...
Okay.
Do you know, sometimes I don't even need a full alignment. I've got to know my body so well and I can go in and say, my neck is out or I'm out such a place. I can be clicked back in and I'm out the door.
Okay. Maeve, you're a remarkable woman. You really are. It's incredible what you've been through and to have, one, the attitude that you have, and two, to endure the pain, and then three, to actually campaign, which you have done so powerfully today, that this is a chiropractor should be. There's less than 200 of them in Ireland, should be, once they follow all the hygiene, etc. guidelines, which the president of the Chiropractor Association of Ireland said they will do, and more if they have to. Hopefully they will be added to the list of essential services. Maeve, kind regards to you and your daughter who was in the crash as well. That's Maeve Kelly. Thanks, Maeve.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you. And Dr. Tony Accardi, thank you also. Tony, are you a medical doctor?
No, doctor of chiropractic.
Doctor of chiropractic.
In the States, a degree is a doctor of chiropractic.
Okay. And it is a degree. It is a third level degree.
Yes, it is. Yeah,
okay. Well, that
Same
speaks.
Here.
that's
in Europe.
Yeah, that speaks a lot as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, in the
States it is at third level. Where is it, Linda? Good afternoon.
Hey.
Chiropractors. What's your situation, Linda?
So yeah, my 3-year-old daughter, she has cerebral palsy. Mm-hmm. So we would go over. We're from Dundalk, but we'd go over to Mullingar to a chiropractor over there.
Okay.
We'd done so before we even knew about cerebral palsy because she had hip dysplasia, which her hips were dislocated. So she was in a spiky cast for 4 months.
Right.
And after that, we were told it might not set. So we went to the chiropractor. We went 4 or 5 times over a 2-week period. And he had told us then that he had, it's definitely set. And that's 2 years now, and there's been no problem mm-hmm. with our hips since. So definitely I'd recommend a chiropractor completely.
Okay, and can you go, you can't go to your chiropractor at the moment?
No, we can't. And same with physiotherapy. She's only back from the US. We went to America for surgery back in November. So it's a very crucial time for her now after surgery, mm-hmm. Spinal surgery. So we are going physiotherapy 4 times a week. And now we're kind of stuck. We're trying to do as much as we can at home. But with any 3-year-old, it's not easy to get her to work with us.
And she would go to physio. Is physiotherapy not regarded as essential either?
No, it's all been cancelled on us, yeah.
Oh, and that was 3 times a week?
4 times a week, yeah. So it's tough now. We have a bit of equipment here at home, but it's trying to get her to comply with us as well because we're mommy and daddy, you know. She can tell us no quicker than she can tell us you know, I suppose. So,
poor child.
Yeah, and also her doctor from the US, he was due to come over to see her post-surgery, and that can't go ahead either. So
Okay, well, thanks for raising it, Linda, and Maeve as well, because that's the job of the programme at the minute. The regulations by necessity are blanket in many ways, but it's important that real people get through and tell their stories how they're affected. So the regulations can be, if the government and the CMO decide, can be calibrated. Linda, kind regards, Maeve, kind regards, and Dr. Tony Accardi. 51551, wash your hands.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And Joe at rt.ie and 51551, wash your hands. Now, as you know, a lot of people are going more than an extra mile at the moment in the crisis to help the HSE, to help our health workers. You heard yesterday the tyre repair company who came on to say that any health worker who gets into difficulty with their car and their tyres, all the call outs will be free from now on during the crisis. Liam Nolan is from Armagh, and this resonates, Liam, with another call we got a few days ago when we were up to our eyes and still are, and that was from a delivery company who were doing work for the HSE either at a reduced rate or for nothing in the crisis. But he said their main outlay was not just the salary to the staff and the cost of running the vans, but it was the toll roads. You were travelling, where were you? You're on the M7 yesterday.
Good afternoon, Joe. Yes, indeed. I was on my way down to Cork. When I actually came to that M7 plaza at Portlaoise,
mm-hmm.
and I was behind the lorry, and actually it was a foreign registered lorry, and the guy got out from the opposite side, and we had round to the booth and done his whatever business he had. But when I got up the length, there was absolutely no protection between the operator that was in the booth.
Mm-hmm.
And the public. And, you know, we're all on about the social distancing aspect of everything now, but there's none there. And I found it absolutely incredible. Like, these people are in contact with, obviously, hundreds of people every day,
mm-hmm.
more than likely all over the continent. And there's just nothing there. There's nothing. There's no protection. I even went into the shop for a pint of milk last night, and there's a great big plexi screen between and the cashier.
Well, they're everywhere. They're everywhere, including in this building at the moment. Yeah,
everywhere. But I found this incredible. And you know, is there a different law for one company than there is for another?
Now, I know you said the driver that got out of his cab. He had to go around because he was driving, obviously.
He was a left-hand driver, because he's foreign registered,
so he's left-hand driver, he'd get out and go around. But that's unusual.
It is unusual for that. That's I've just noticed, because it was a guy that was in front of me when I was waiting to go through the toll, and it just happened to be. But, you know, regardless whether he was from France or Germany or wherever he was.
Okay. You also think the healthcare workers should be allowed travel free?
Oh, absolutely. My God, they certainly should be, you know, anybody working for an essential service like healthcare should be free to pass through the tolls. Sure, it's scandalous that they're being charged to go through the toll. And them frontline workers like that, that have no option but go and deal with
okay.
People.
And what was bringing you to Cork yesterday, Liam, from...
Well, actually, I was going. I had a meeting with a shipping company. I was trying to track down some stuff that was being shipped this last 2 months, and we just.
And where was it coming from, Liam?
It's coming from China.
Oh God! Okay.
And seemingly there's no shipping containers to do anything with, so that seemed one of the problems. But.
We're hearing, well, one of the indexes, I think the Hong Kong went up this morning on the basis that they said that manufacturing in China was returning to normality quicker than people had predicted. But in your case, it's not, is it?
Well, it's not, because stuff is not leaving the port, seemingly. That's what I'm told. You know.
Okay. And how are you managing generally, Liam? You're on the road a lot, obviously.
Yeah, well, I was on the road yesterday.
Okay.
I'm back at home.
Okay. Well, you're in Armagh, so I don't know whether you saw the piece this morning, and Dr. Gabriel Scally was on the station with Sean saying that one of the great difficulties at the moment is that there's a different regime in terms of COVID-19 in Northern Ireland as there is in the South.
Oh, yeah, the regime is definitely different, but... It seems to be applied all over in the same way. But here, going through that toll yesterday, actually, it just seems to be, you know, these things apply to one place and they don't apply to another.
Okay,
let's
hope it's heard. Liam Nolan, safe travelling, Liam. Liam is in Armagh. Margaret, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe, how are you?
An unusual, on the scale of 1 to 100, it's probably... I'm not up there, but in terms of the psyche, what happened, Margaret?
So for St. Patrick's Day, as you're aware, the parade was going to be cancelled.
Yeah.
So there was a thing going viral, and to put things in your window, you know, to celebrate St. Patrick's Day, the children's artwork and the like. So I put up, I have a quite large Irish flag, and I put it on my balcony on my apartment, and I have chalk paint. So I wrote Happy St. Patrick's Day on the window, and I put my children's artwork up.
Lovely, lovely.
And a number of days later, I got a knock on the door, and it was, I don't know who he was, but he said he was from the management company, and he asked me to remove the flag.
Why?
So I explained, I explained, well, I had it up for St. Patrick's Day, I said, and I just left it up for solidarity. So we live on a main road, and we would regularly see the guards going by, and ambulance, and fire brigade, and it was just, I've seen online as well, that people in Italy... Sorry, that's my child. People in Italy had been flying their flags to show solidarity for the frontline workers. So I decided I would do the same thing.
And I think I think I've seen a few flags on my journey into work.
Absolutely. I've still seen a number of flags around locally.
And by the way, the minute you see them, you know what they're there for in the current crisis, because that's what everyone is thinking about. They are there for standing together, solidarity, supporting public services.
That's exactly what I felt.
So what happens if you don't take down the flag?
Well, I did take it down.
Oh,
and
you
I took
did?
It down
okay.
because, okay. But the reason I took it down was because I was so taken aback, and I thought, oh gosh, well, I suppose if I've been told to do this by the management company, I better. But I just felt it was wrong. I'm tempted to put it back up, you know.
And the person that knocked on your door, did they say what the sanction would be if you did not remove the Irish flag?
No, he didn't say anything like that. And we don't have any rules about not hanging anything.
Well, that's interesting,
balcony.
Yeah.
And I've had it out every year. And I'm living here 9 years. And my neighbour flies the Brazilian flag when Brazil are playing football as well.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I just felt it was just very strange. I really did.
Okay, okay. And Margaret, how are you managing? That's your child there.
Yeah, running by. Yeah, okay. Very busy here. I have two little boys, so I'm homeschooling and everything. So and I'm trying to do college myself, so I'm quite busy.
Okay, what, by the way, what did you write on the window?
So I had written on it Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
And then I just changed it recently. I put a little, I put another little message just, I can't remember what exactly it
probably says. Probably we're in this together. Or...
Yeah, says, I'm trying to think of the wording.
Okay, but it was a solidarity greeting.
Yeah, the world came together as the people stayed apart. That's what it is.
Yeah, which is the Simon Coveney line from 2 weeks ago. And I saw it in Searson's pub in Waterloo Road there in Dublin. They have the front of their building. It's normally for rugby events. They have this massive professionally done banner. But then the front of their building, again, professionally done, is that exact phrase. That exact phrase. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I have up now.
Okay, Margaret. Well done. Okay. Kind
Thank
regards
you.
To you and your family, Margaret.
Stay
well. 51551, wash your hands. But let me bring in Dr. Jennifer Cassidy. Jennifer, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
How are you? You're based in the UK. You've had an awful ordeal in the last few weeks. I know we mentioned earlier about the difference between Northern Ireland, which is obviously part of the United Kingdom and Northern Ireland, and here. What has happened in your situation? Have you been diagnosed with COVID-19, Jennifer?
So, just first of all, I'd like to say that I do want to make the caveat that just like, you know, hearing, I've been listening to Liveline and all the news over the last few weeks, and I certainly don't want to put mine as like I'm you know, one of the lucky ones, and my heart goes out to everyone who's suffering and those who've lost their family. So I don't want to never think that, you know, that I'm suffering worse than anyone. But so I'm sure, as you've seen, so I'm a diplomacy and politics lecturer, so news is something that I'm, and policy is something that I'm quite innately involved in, and I'm sure you've seen that the UK testing is very low on the global chart of testing, and the doctors and the nurses up until 2 days ago couldn't get tested. But I have been taken to hospital twice by ambulance for it. I have a doctor search and everything saying I've had it. I have to take an oxygen test home and to check my levels consistently. And I just know from my own body that there's absolutely no way it wasn't it, but I certainly didn't want to waste a test for a critically ill patient who needed a respirator.
And have you been tested, or is it simply that the medics say you have all the symptoms? It's obvious that you have COVID-19.
Yeah, so I've been twice, and so they basically in the UK, they will only test people, because they're not even testing doctors or nurses as of 2 days ago, but even then it's shortage. They're not testing them unless you are critical.
Yeah.
And so that's why the numbers are extremely skewed. And I do say this as like a political scientist. This is not, you know, I have the numbers front. These why the numbers are skewed, because I know many people around me who have had it, but those numbers, and the doctor consultant was even, you know, affirming that to me, that these numbers weren't to be counted. However, they are keeping their own tabs on people who they deem to have it, but have not been tested.
And Jennifer, what prompted you having to be taken to hospital in an ambulance?
I didn't even understand, this sounds a bit strange, I didn't even really understand the concept of sick days up until I had this. I started self-isolating, term ended on Friday. I started self-isolating on Friday just to a few underlying health conditions that I just couldn't afford to be sick again. Nevertheless, now I had been to Italy a number of weeks ago, but a number of people I was around there tested positive. So, but the doctor said it would be unlikely that it incubated for that long. It would have been incubated for 2 weeks longer. However, I did start developing the symptoms in the house. I stayed them all for 5 days myself, you know, saying like, no, it's like, okay, I can get through this, it's fine. But then the breathing just became so difficult. I was so fatigued. Thankfully, I had a very good friend with me, and the paramedics had already sanctioned her to stay with me because they said the chances of you, because we've been together for like 10 days already. And then I rang 111, which is our COVID line in the UK. They came down to check my oxygen levels and my heart rate, and they said, oh no, you have to go to hospital.
But you're saying even after the paramedics decided that you were so serious that you had to be brought to hospital, you're saying in the UK they didn't do a COVID test?
Yeah, and that's twice. So I had to, this happened again 5 days later. I was getting worse. Yeah. And then my oxygen levels, where I have now an oxygen test with me, test with me that they gave me. So I think around 95, we're all, as we say, epidemiologists after this, but they say 95 is like around, like you should be kind of a little concerned around 95, but my oxygen levels were 89, which is very, very low.
And how are you now, Jennifer?
Much better.
Yeah. And Jennifer, I know you're based in the UK, but you follow Irish media a lot, obviously.
Oh, I do have to say, I do listen to your show. Okay. Not just saying this because I'm on the show. I've been listening to it for 12 years to keep in with the...
But Jennifer, what do you think, there's the same level of alarm and alertness in the UK as there is here?
Now, but way too late.
Now there is, but it's too late.
It's too late, yeah.
Oh, God.
So, like, I think anyone who knows me would know that I am, you know, vehemently against a lot of policies that the UK pursue. However, I have not been engaging at in that debate of critique at the moment, because I just don't think I just don't think it's worthwhile to critique at the moment. I think all our energy should just be focused on finding the best collective solution. And we are, a lot of people now are now definitely adhering in the UK to the social distancing measures. Some aren't, but certainly the comparison between Ireland, like my whole family is in Ireland. My brother is in the US, so we're also concerned about him. But the comparison has just been so stark. Like, I watched Prime Minister Johnson give his speech, and then I also watched the Taoiseach Varadkar give the speech, and the difference... And I'm not aligned to any political party. And the difference was just indescribable, really.
And Jennifer, how are you today?
Much better. I don't want to... Every day I'm like... I come out and I say to my friend, I'm like, I don't want to brag, but I think I'm feeling better. Yes, so I check my oxygen levels every day. Like, the NHS have been brilliant here, the GP, because how bad my observations were. They check in, like, nearly every day. And very fatigued, and we went for, because I've been inside for 21 days, just didn't, well, a lot of the time I couldn't do anything, like I couldn't even get out of bed, but also I'm just very worried about that, like we don't exactly know how this works. So I don't want to risk anyone getting sick.
Yeah, you're right. So hopefully a full and speedy recovery, Jennifer. But it's a fascinating insight into the two jurisdictions at the moment. That's Dr. Jennifer Cassidy. Thank you, Jennifer. 51551 joe@rte.ie. Wash your hands.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And Joe at RT.ie. And I was really struck yesterday, as a lot of people were, the number of over 70s who, one, didn't know about the cocooning rule, which means you should not and cannot leave your accommodation under any circumstances, except in medical emergency, and should never, ever, ever hesitate to dial 999 or your GP. Never hesitate. But you cannot leave if you're over 70 for any other reason, and you should only accept visits in essential circumstances. And then there was a number of people who openly said they went out on Sunday, and some other people openly, over 70, said they were going to go and collect their pension. They couldn't handle the cocooning. And the best way to actually get get the message home to them. There's no malice here by those people. Is to hear stories like the people who contacted us afterwards, such as Brendan. Brendan, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Good. You just want to remind people the reason why you should not go out. What is your situation?
In my own case, I'm in recovery from major surgery. I lost a lung due to cancer, and I'm 7 weeks now. And you know, you're scared because you're and I'm also immunosuppressed. It's 2 years. But another aspect of it is that I had appointments cancelled now for the oncologists, and
right.
I know they're cancelled for the best of reasons. But it's another aspect of it that you know people everyday illnesses are being parked, for the want of a better word, until this crisis is over, and you have the anxious that you know that you had the surgery to remove the cancer, but the second part of it is obviously going to be treatment, and you know it's not happening, and it's an added worry to us. And
yeah, well, I know, as I said, St. Luke's are operating as per usual, an excellent service in the midst of the crisis, fully operational. But obviously, I'm surmising from what you say and what we're generally hearing, hospitals, I presume everything is slowed down in a hospital because they have to deep clean and they have to even gown everyone has to gown up. But your chemotherapy was cancelled. But your point is, your
initial consultation with the consultant was cancelled. You know what I mean? Whereas you're not looking forward to going for the treatment, but you know,
you haven't even got on that first step yet of the consultation.
And it's just a worry. And maybe people should consider that when they're out. And, you know, there's a lot of us are living under scared.
Okay. You know? I presume you're not going out, Brandon.
No.
Okay.
No.
But,
I'm staying in my home and in my backyard.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's another aspect of it, and the pressure that's on the pressure of the health system, but you know, people continue to get sick with other things, you know.
Okay, and another strong point that was made yesterday about over 70s, and there has to be some cut-off point, but another point made yesterday was, like, if you go out even for a walk and you fail, you would invariably at that age end up in hospital and end up in a busy hospital, which they're not overwhelmed by any. We're not at that pass yet, thankfully. But we don't want any more people coming to A&E. Even for your own sake, in terms of infection. Stay with us, Brendan, and I really wish you well, and I hope you can get on that conveyor belt very, very quickly. Let me bring in Kathleen Smith. Kathleen, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Good. How are you? You want to remind people why if the government say don't go out, you are one of the reasons why you shouldn't go out. What's your circumstances, Kathleen?
Well, Joe, last February 12 months, I was diagnosed with a tumour on my brain stem the size of a mandarin orange.
Okay.
And to make a long story short, I got into hospital in May.
Right.
And I had it removed in May after a 12-hour operation.
Okay.
I nearly died twice. I was on a ventilator and I had a tracheostomy.
Right.
And I was in hospital in Dublin for 4 months, and I was in rehab after that for 5 months. And I have a weakness down the right side of my body, my leg, my hand, my arm, my foot, my whole right side of my body has to be trained to get strong again.
Okay.
And I have a palsy on the left-hand side of my face.
So I've
really been through hell.
Yeah.
And I'm terrified of this virus. Absolutely terrified.
And that's why you want to say to people, do everything.
Don't go out.
Yeah.
Stay in. Don't go out. It's too dangerous.
Yeah. And you've three children in the medical world as well, haven't you, Kathleen?
I have three children. I've a daughter, she works in England, and I have another daughter here, and they're at the forefront of it all. And you're worried about them all the time, you know.
And who?
So you are.
Who's minding you at the moment, Kathleen?
Well, I have a daughter here who happens to be a physio, and she's staying with me for the moment.
Okay.
And my husband, he's trying to work when he can, I have a son here that's working from home.
Okay.
And I have another daughter here who is, well, she finished work last week because her work was classed as non-essential.
Mm-hmm.
So she's not working. But it's all so frightening.
Yeah.
I really am afraid.
You're in good hands there with your family, Kathleen.
Yes.
How long were you in hospital for?
I spent 4 months in a Dublin hospital. I was in from the 22nd of May. And within the 22nd of May, I had the operation on the 23rd. And I came out of there on the 10th of September and went to rehab for 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I came home eventually on the 34th. Of January.
Incredible.
And I speak slowly and I get it hard to speak though because the left hand side of my face is, you know, it's all tight and the trigeminal nerve there they're not damaged. The doctor told us at the time when we removed the tumour that he insulted the nerves.
Okay.
He didn't have to cut the nerves but he had to insult them and they don't like to be touched.
Okay.
Nerves don't like to be touched.
So, Kathleen, you, after all you've been through and are going through, you're saying, and I know you contacted said you're, I'm annoyed and frustrated that people are not confining themselves.
I am.
You treasure life.
Absolutely. Oh, Joe, Do I what? I've learned that I'm never going to take anything for granted again.
Yeah.
You never take any, because this came upon me, I was fine, I thought I was fine, but I went away for a weekend last February with the girls in my household, my sisters, and down to Kilkenny, and we went out for a meal on the Saturday night, and I just fell over on my sister's shoulder.
Yeah.
And that was the start of it. And I ended up in Kilkenny General Hospital that night with blood pressure that was through the roof.
Yeah.
And eventually, about 4 o'clock in the morning, they managed to get the blood pressure down somewhat. And the doctor said there, you have to go home, but you must go to your GP on Monday.
Okay.
And I went, and I will forever be grateful to my GP because she says, I'm going to send you for a brain scan.
Okay, well done.
And she
well
sent
done.
Me for the brain scan.
And that was the debut.
And that was how it was picked up.
And Kathleen, what kept you going during that nearly a year of being in a hospital bed with that?
Well, I really don't know, Joe. I don't know.
Well,
I had no choice.
Yeah, it's your own willpower and
I had
attitude
no
to
choice.
Life. Yeah.
I had to keep going. It was either that or give up, and I was not prepared to do that.
Good woman. Well done.
And I'm not prepared to do it now with this COVID virus.
Yeah, well done. Well
but
said.
But everybody else has to
play their
listen
part.
Listen to the government. The government can only do so much.
Yeah.
They're telling people to stay at home, and they can't do any more than that.
Yeah.
I think Leo Varadkar and Simon Harris are doing a fantastic job. I'd have to congratulate
and you're doing a fantastic job as well because you're the type of person that Tony Holohan and the politicians of all use want to hear in terms of you're saying quite clearly, I've been through hell and back for the last year.
I'll tell you, Joe, people said to me, you've done your purgatory. Well, I said, if this is purgatory, I dread to think what hell is like.
Wow. But you've been through hell, but you're saying to people, I treasure life, and I want you to treasure
absolutely.
It as well.
And I treasure my family more than I ever treasured them.
Okay.
And I have two little grandchildren that I absolutely adore. We can't see them now,
okay.
But that's fine.
Yeah,
we see them on WhatsApp, we see them on FaceTime.
Great.
And we're keeping in touch with them that way.
Okay.
But we want everyone to be well. That's all we want.
Okay, superb. Really well said, Kathleen. Well said. And I'm so sorry that you've had to go through and are going through and you have the effects
actually,
of that.
Joe, there's loads more people like me in hospitals all over the country.
Okay. So,
I'm not the only one.
So I know it's an inconvenience for a lot of people, you're saying, but please, life is precious. And,
Absolutely. So precious.
And Kathleen, do you have any little treats? Do you get... Obviously, you're talking to your grandchildren on the WhatsApp and the FaceTime. Can you?
Well, you see, I can't really do. I'm walking on a frame now, Joe.
Okay.
I went from being totally hoisted. I had to have full height because I wasn't able to move a muscle.
Yeah.
But I'm able to walk on a frame now. And
okay.
I'm getting on to sticks. I'm starting to manage the sticks. It's very Great. Hard. It's very, yeah. very tough. And I would be very tired every night. But I'm doing it.
Okay.
Because I want to do it and I want to get well. I want to get well for my family, my husband, my children, my grandchildren, who have been absolutely superb through all this. I mean, I was out of it for a lot of the time.
Right.
I didn't know what was going on, but they were living it.
Yeah.
You know, they yeah. were living, they were watching me. And they couldn't do anything for me.
Yeah. You're a wise, wise woman, Kathleen Smith. You really
well,
are.
Well, I don't know, Joe.
You are.
What
I'm
I am,
just. I'm riveted by even your phraseology and the power of your message, and
yeah.
it's so important and at the moment, and especially as
Thank
people,
you, Joe.
And understandably, I know. People yesterday were saying, well, can exceptions be made? And then some people were saying they were unaware of it. But to hear your message by begging people to abide by the government rules.
Begging people. I'm allowed outside now. I could go outside.
Okay.
I have been trained how to transfer from the frame into the car.
Okay.
But I'm afraid of my life to go out.
Okay.
I won't even go outside.
Yeah.
I'm afraid of my life to go out.
Okay.
Like I spent the 22nd of May to the 31st of January in the hospital.
Incredible.
And but I'm only one, Joe.
I know. I can
there
hear
are
that.
Numerous people in the hospital that I was in.
Yeah.
I wouldn't like to say what hospital
yeah,
it was.
Yeah, don't. Yeah.
But in any of those hospitals, there's numerous people like that.
Yeah.
In actual fact, there was one man when I was in Dublin, and I have a weakness down one side of my body. This poor man had a weakness down both sides of his body.
Okay.
He couldn't even scratch his nose.
Yeah, Kathleen, I'm not surprised that a number of your family are involved in the caring professions, because
I
say they got it from yourself and your husband. Oh. Well done.
Well, thank you,
Kathleen.
Joe.
Mind yourself.
And thank you very much, Joe, and it's been a pleasure to speak to you.
Well, it's been a privilege to listen to you, and I hope
you... And I'll tell you someone else I want to congratulate.
Okay.
I heard him on the radio last week on Morning Ireland, and I thought, what a gem of a man, and that is the jockey, what's he called? Ted Walsh.
Ted Walsh, another wise man.
Ted Walsh is a darling of a man. I love Ted Smith.
Okay.
He speaks total sense.
Okay. As you do, Kathleen. Kathleen Smith, mind yourself,
Thank
Petal.
You, Joe.
Mind yourself.
Thank
You're
you very
brilliant.
Much, Joe.
You're brilliant.
Joe
Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And Joe at RT continues. Privileged to talk and to listen to Kathleen Smith. And I hope whether we replay it on our podcast. And she was a powerful, powerful contributor at this very difficult time. It's a privilege to be in here listening to people such as Kathleen and all the other callers today and yesterday. Today's show was produced by Annette Egan. The broadcast coordinator was Lane Conlon. Angus McAnally, Fergus Sweeney, Tara Lockery-Grant and Lisa Berry are beavering away fiendishly at home at the moment for us, and really appreciated them and their families. Mark McGrath's on sound, and Rebecca Meehan is the series producer, and Ray Darcy is next.